And welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare for the Central New York community. And this is Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, I have one of our frequent and favorite guests in the studio with me this morning to speak on the topic of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Dr. Sharon Brangman, geriatrician and professor of medicine at SUNY Upstate, is here. Good morning, Dr. Brangman.
Good morning.
Well, as you know, this topic is near and dear to my heart. My mother has Alzheimer's, and that means, of course, that our entire family suffers from her Alzheimer's. But recently, you have hosted an Alzheimer's conference for families and for caregivers, and I hope you'd be able to bring us up to date on what was discussed at the conference.
Well, it was our 20th annual conference. We've been doing this now for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and we realized the important role that caregivers play in helping patients with Alzheimer's disease. We always say that we have two patients when we diagnose Alzheimer's disease. We have the patient who has it and the person who's taking care of them.
And, you know, I know that is absolutely true. Now, my parents are in Florida, and my dad has been a caregiver, although my mother is in a memory center, as they call it now. But even still, on a daily basis, he spends time with her, and I see the toll it takes on him. So for the caregiver who's right there 24/7, it's even a bigger burden, isn't it?
It definitely is. And frequently it is a spouse, as your father is,
mm-hmm.
who may be just as old and have as many medical problems as the person with Alzheimer's disease. But it's also an adult child,
mm-hmm.
frequently a daughter, but sons do also play this role as caregiver. They often have their own jobs, their own family. And they've been dubbed the sandwich generation because they're squeezed between both levels of care for their children as well as for their parents.
Absolutely. And this is a 24/7 job. This is not a job even when they go to bed at night. I mean, for a while when my mom was still living at home, she would get up and wander. She would even wander next door. I mean, there were times that Dad had to put the handles on the door like you would put on for a toddler so to make sure they couldn't get out.
Well, you bring up one of the most stressful parts of caregiving. If a caregiver cannot get a good night's rest or sleep, they cannot face the day of caregiving again. And frequently with Alzheimer's disease, we see disruption in the sleep-wake cycle. So we'll see someone who is sleepy during the day and then up and raring to go at night. And after a full day of caregiving, most caregivers cannot handle that.
You know, it's interesting. One of the biggest helps to me was a book that came out and is being used by the Alzheimer's Association, I understand. And it was called, now I don't remember it,
The 36-Hour Day.
That's what it was. Yes. You're right. And, you know, more than anything, what that gave me a sense of was that we were not alone, that what my mother was experiencing and what our family was experiencing were just what happens with Alzheimer's patients and many dementia patients across the board. Is that the first thing you tell caregivers, is you're not alone and this is not unusual?
We say that all the time. In fact, when caregivers read that book, they think it was written for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely
and
true.
And we know how important it is for people to vent and express their concerns.
Frustration.
Sadness, guilt.
All of those
fatigue,
things.
Fatigue, depression, mm-hmm. isolation. Those are all significant parts of it. We've heard just about every angle of caregiving that's out there because this is not a unique problem.
So now we take that into the future. And someone who starts now with some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease or dementia, either one, and the family starts looking at the situation, maybe there's a spouse and maybe there isn't. It takes a wholesale lifestyle alteration to care for that one person, doesn't it?
It does. That's why we see denial as often the first step. Denial can help kind of soften the blow of what the reality is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe initially it can be helpful, but if you can't get past that denial, you're missing the opportunity to start making some plans and moving forward.
And, you know, I do remember that. I mean, early on, my mom was diagnosed 9 years ago. My sisters and I noticed symptoms probably 2 years before that, but we weren't allowed to talk about them because as if, you know, talking about them would make them happen. But I see your point, because if you start working on it early, then there are some things you can do to smooth the road.
Well, an educated caregiver is best equipped to provide this kind of care. So that's why it's so important to help the caregiver get the resources and the knowledge that they need to start facing this disease.
And that's really what your conference was about, wasn't it?
Exactly. We focus each year on different topics that we think, in the broad picture, will help someone find that information, get the resources that they need to move forward.
How much, if the caregivers are well-educated and the caregivers understand what to expect and maybe some of the tools for doing what it is they need to do for their caregiving, how much does that help you as the doctor, the geriatrician, do your job better?
Well, it is definitely a team approach. We have to have someone who's helping us. When we have the patient in the office, often they cannot even provide the information we need. They cannot take the medications without some assistance. They can't dress and get through the day without a caregiver. So a caregiver really becomes our eyes and ears and helps us to put perspective on the situation.
And to what extent are Alzheimer's patients coming to you with still other diseases and conditions so that you're dealing with more than just the Alzheimer's?
Well, it's very common because Alzheimer's disease affects people primarily who are older,
yes,
70, 80, and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the time when there are other organ systems or other diseases that are being affected. So it is not unusual for us to also have a patient with hypertension, diabetes, arthritis, that just any of the usual problems we see. And in fact, when I talk to physicians and I talk to them about a patient who they're having trouble managing their high blood pressure or managing their diabetes, I would say, have you talked to them about their memory? Have you assessed their memory?
Mm-hmm.
Because people cannot take care of their basic health when they have problems with their memory.
Exactly right. I mean, they don't remember to take their medicine. They
exactly.
don't remember they have appointments. They lose track during the day.
Exactly.
They don't eat correctly.
Exactly. So it becomes sort of like a foundation disease in that every other disease and every other aspect of their life is impacted by being forgetful.
You know, the one thing that I've given some thought to, and I don't have answers, maybe you have some for me, is how much does this happen in other countries? You know, one of the things we talk about is longevity. How long are we keeping people alive? And we know that in other cultures, they value an older person more than we in America value an older person. Do they have the same problems with Alzheimer's and dementia?
Yes. I mean, this is the same disease no matter what your country of origin, your race, your ethnicity. The approach may be different. Other cultures have different levels of respect for older adults and their elders. Nursing home care may not be considered or even an option. They don't have the financial resources to do anything other than having their family members live with them and become part of the household. And often the oldest child is expected to take this role. In many Asian cultures, many Latino cultures, African cultures, that's expected. You take care of your elders.
And that actually does happen to an extent here in this country, doesn't it?
Oh, certainly it does. I think that we do realize our responsibility, our role, if it's nothing more than payback for what parents did for us.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that many adult children are also very busy trying to figure out how to manage their careers, their children and their families.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have women who are out in the workforce. Women are not home providing that caregiver role as they might have done a generation ago. So this adds to that level of complexity in when you're trying to figure out how to take care of your parents.
And then we have the whole situation of we have Social Security in place, we have Medicare in place, we are moving some Alzheimer's patients into nursing homes, but in some cases you have a family member who's quitting a job to take care of them. Therefore, now is no longer feeding into their own Social Security or their own Medicare for later on in life. It becomes a vicious cycle, doesn't it?
Well, I think what we fail to understand is that Medicare is really geared for taking care of acute medical problems. It was not put in place really for the chronic medical problems that we're seeing now in our society.
And chronic meaning Alzheimer's disease, but also things like diabetes,
Heart disease, cancers.
Mm-hmm.
We can now keep people alive longer with many different cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you need to go into the hospital or if you need to take a medication, Medicare will cover that. But if you need care to get through the day, if you need someone to remind you to take your pills or help you get to the bathroom, Medicare doesn't cover that.
Yeah.
That's where families have to step in.
Wow. And, you know, that actually raises an ethical question. I've been reading about this recently. The question being, when you have a patient with Alzheimer's disease and they're getting to the advanced stages, there are some doctors now who are saying we should be questioning whether or not we keep extending the lives of these people who really seem to have almost no quality of life, especially the caregivers who have devoted their lives. Those ethical questions, do we give them antibiotics? Do we take care of their heart disease? Is this something you run into?
Well, it's very important to look at end-of-life care. And when we see someone approaching the final stages, we need to start having that discussion with families. What are the limits of treatment? You know, we think of hospice care for people with end-stage cancer, but hospice is also very appropriate for people with end-stage Alzheimer's disease. And that's when we're not trying to cure them. We're trying to have the highest quality of life and a peaceful death. And that's very doable with the right conversation.
And sometimes I think it's the difference between remembering that Alzheimer's disease is just as much a physical disease as it is a mental or emotional disease.
That's very true. And families often tell me they feel as though they're experiencing two deaths. They see the first death when the person is no longer recognizing them, but their body is still there, and then a second death when their body dies. And the grieving process is really a significant part of this disease, and that's what we also have to help families with.
And, you know, that absolutely rings true for me. Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman, thanks so much for coming by this morning. It's a difficult discussion. We will continue with our discussion. We hope we can have you back soon.
Thank you. Anytime.
Listeners, we do need to take a break. Please stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.